Hi, I'm Patty Enrada with HIMSS, and I'm with Andy Nieto, Global Healthcare Solutions Manager at Lenovo. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you so much for having me, Patty.
Great. So in today's podcast, we'll discuss how Lenovo can transform its solutions to improve the impact its customers provide to healthcare. So Andy, my first question to you is, how have you seen the role of technology evolve in the healthcare industry over the last year and a half?
Technology is a funny question in healthcare because we often say, well, we've always had technology in healthcare. Think about our diagnostics and the tools we use in healthcare. And yet when we think about what care means, it's always I go to a person to receive my care. And what's been very interesting in the last 18 months is how we have embraced the concept of virtualization of care delivery. We always have talked about telemedicine, and there's always been little conversations. I remember back to HIMSS, I believe it was HIMSS 2012, where there was a survey about telehealth. Who's doing telehealth? And lots of people would raise their hand. Or, well, what are you doing? Oh, we have a nurse call line, or we have this little communication here. But there was not a real adoption. It wasn't centered to our care delivery strategy in healthcare. But due to the pandemic and due to things that have happened, we have seen this incredible growth of the concept of virtual healthcare delivery. And that was really showcased this year at HIMSS when we looked at all the different modalities. And it really kind of, as I looked at it across the spectrum, I really saw a couple of different modalities really being brought out. You know, we saw those that were focused on remote visit or remote clinical exam, remote physical exam, that kind of package of solutions, and different vendors talking about how they address that. We saw a lot of people talking about this concept of remote patient monitoring. How do we monitor patients when they leave the hospital or they have a chronic condition? And a lot of vendors are really getting a lot of press around that, especially around chronic disease states like diabetes and heart disease. Then you had this really, really interesting concept of patient engagement as a virtual health trend. That was one that was a little more nebulous. It was, well, what's the value prop? Yes, we want to engage our patients, but where are we going with that one? And that one seemed a little more nebulous. And the final one being this concept of hospital at home. How do we recover at home? How do we leverage technology to move people home sooner and yet address their outpatient status, even though they're effectively still hospitalized in terms of their care delivery? And so that this kind of overarching strategy around virtual care delivery is really the biggest technology advancement and one that I'm really excited about because it addresses some of the real core problems we have in healthcare today.
Great. So how do you see your customers creatively using the volume of information that's generated?
Boy, creativity is absolutely the name of the game when it comes to data. When we think about I read one survey that said 5 to 6 petabytes of data of healthcare specific data each week generated in the world, and that healthcare data and managing the volume of data is actually a measurable effect on our environment, just from the energy demand and the heat demand and process all that data. Creativity really is the name of the game. So we're seeing a lot of things happen. The first thing that we're seeing is an expectation at the business level and at the executive level of healthcare leaders to say, we have all this information. Let's make it actionable. Let's use it. Let's do something with it. We're seeing a real drive, and it is really starting to explode where we have this concept of information sharing and a promotion of how do we share information and how do we use things like AI to de-identify information so we can use it for research and a ways of saying, okay, I have a patient here. How do I create a longitudinal patient record of all of their clinical information from this hospital and this physician and this EHR and this EHR and this EHR? We're starting to see that aggregation come together in really, really positive ways. And that trend, I think, has been growing. Some of it's grassroots, and there's lots of different tools, but we're finally getting to the point that we're starting to see that actually click and being used to create real-time actionable information. And the third part of it is we're starting to recognize the value of that data, and the value of that data, not just so that we can protect it and ensure that it's important, but understanding that it, the impact isn't just about making sure that Patty's care is good and Andy's care is good, but recognizing that how do we address Raleigh, North Carolina, or Orlando, Florida, or Las Vegas, Nevada, and deliver on their care expectations from a locality? And what is the, what is different in care in this geography versus this geography? And how do we leverage lessons learned there? So that's kind of a nebulous answer, but what I'm, but creativity really is the name of the game. And to that end, I'm really proud of the industry for really embracing data as a valuable part of the healthcare technology world.
So you talked about protection, you know, so what protections are offered, you know, through the increase of data security breaches in all industries around the globe?
Well, that's a tough one, isn't it? As we think about security, about 18 months ago, or a little bit more for some of us, we all went home. We started working from home. And what one of the things that clearly happened in this let's work from home environment and this broader expansion of where business is performed is that the threat landscape has become really extended. So no longer do we have the safe zone and not safe zone of data, because nothing is now safe. Long gone are the days where we had a firewall and you were either inside or outside, and inside was safe, outside wasn't. We now have to have a completely new approach to security. And so whether the security is around endpoint management, where each endpoint has individual directed dynamic responses to threats, or whether it's about in the middleware to say, okay, is there access? Is there authority? Is there data? You know, does this user, does this request have authority to get into that data? And how do we protect the data? To the infrastructural demands of how do we protect, manage, and prevent malfeasance with the data, but also the loss of the data, that very data integrity, whether we're talking about ransomware, or whether we're talking about really battling with viruses and malware and things that affect the integrity of that data. It has, we've gone from a passive, here's my antivirus, here's my firewall, here's these elements, to extremely dynamic, proactive software and firmware and hardware applications that must work in concert. I loved a conversation I had a couple of years ago with someone who said, we really have to think about security with the word diode. And it was about data. It was about identity. Who is the user? And does that user have authority, right? It's about the device and how we address the device. And it's also about being online. So data, the individual online, and then the device, you know, but our online world really changed 18 months ago, because now our online world is also our business world, right? And so how do we, the endpoint must have dynamic security, the middle must have dynamic security, and the infrastructure, the inside must have dynamic security. And it must become a culture, right? It has to be a cultural change that a user says, I know when I get something that says click here, that doesn't mean I want to click there. That email is probably not okay. And we have to continue to be vigilant, because the scariest part of our security is that people are the weakest link.
So what are your opinions on the future of telemedicine and remote patient monitoring?
Wow. So telemedicine and remote patient monitoring will continue to evolve. We have become as a society almost accustomed to being monitored, something that was kind of unheard of. You know, we were all read George Orwell's 1984 in high school and said, oh, that's bad. And yet we carry our phones and that's a tracker, and everyone knows where we are. And we have our Fitbits and our smart watches that we can, we're tracking our pulse oximetry, and we're tracking our heart rate, and we're tracking all these different elements. And we're starting to perceive and understand that all of these pieces play into our understanding of wellness. So when we start talking about remote patient monitoring, I'm always reminded that we're a patient point 2% of our life when we're in a care facility, the rest of the time we're people. And that monitoring our health from a whole person wellness perspective is about knowing, am I healthy? And you know, we can use things like non-scale victories. My belt is one notch smaller today, right? Or we can say, this is my current weight. This is my waist size. This is my BMI. This is how my height. And here's my blood pressure. And here's my blood sugar. And what can I do to address wellness? I think as we put these things together and you attach them to that digital front door we talked about from an access to care, that we will see more interoperability between our personal wellness devices, our personal remote person monitoring status, and our wellness, and that connectivity to our care providers. And I think we'll start seeing more adoption of, okay, I want you to walk 10,000 steps a day because I want to improve your cardiovascular health. And we're going to start seeing more outcomes. And if you're not doing it, an outreach that says, Andy, you only done about 2,000 steps a day for the last week. Are you feeling ill? Are you, you know, what's going on? Why aren't you addressing your healthcare to proactively prevent these age and behavior related diseases from becoming chronic within us, right? And so taking that full circle to your question, the future of telemedicine is really a true interactive relationship with our care providers that is patient-centric. It is consumer or patient and person driven with access to all of our care providers, and that our treatment direction and that the allocation of our treatment using telemedicine will take everything that is known about us from our remote person monitoring, as well as the acuity and criticality of our illness or our current complaint, if you will, and direct us to the care provider with our holistic information to say, you're having this issue, you need to go to the hospital, we're going to send an ambulance. That is it's allergies probably, and we're going to allocate you to this outpatient clinic and you know, distribute our care, direct our care, leverage the resources of the entire care population and the resources within hospitals and the entire care environment, allocate them better using telemedicine and this concept of a digital front door going forward.
Right. You know, Andy, you mentioned AI before. So how is AI used in process automation, and how can that apply to the healthcare industry?
As we talked about early on, there's a lot of data. We have a tremendous amount of data, and we have to start figuring out ways to deal with that data. And the promise of machine learning and artificial intelligence and these different ways of looking at data really give us some great opportunities to understand the information around us and use that information effectively. But we also have to remember that AI can do things that in real time that we're currently paying staff to do or not do well. For example, what can we use from an AI perspective to keep track of patients that are at a fall risk? Is there a way to monitor this patient's getting out of bed and they're at a very high fall risk to alert a caregiver to go into that patient's room and make sure that if they need to go to the restroom, fine. But if they're a tremendous fall risk, we probably don't want them getting out of bed by themselves, right? And that's kind of almost an AI IoT kind of environment, right? Where we're remotely monitoring, we're leveraging some artificial intelligence to say the patient has gone from horizontal to sitting up, they're getting out of bed, they're moving in this direction, and alert someone instead of having someone as a sitter, if you will, almost in the room, making sure the patient doesn't get out of bed. Can we use that in a memory care facility to address our patients that are in memory care to keep them safe so that they don't wander off, that we're keeping track of them? Where are they? Are they being cared for? Is there a way to follow them in a real-time interface using artificial intelligence to say, all these patients are here. What's going on with this patient over here who isn't with the rest of the patients? Are they okay? Do they need additional care? Are they safe? you know, our population says we have 99 patients and there's only 97 showing up. Where are the other two? You know, how can we leverage it in real time? Obviously, we have to address the volume of data and look proactively. But I think that the low-hanging fruit, the initial opportunity, is how do we address real-time needs to release the burden from care providers that I've got these six patients on the ward that are fall risks. How do we monitor them so I don't have a nurse who has to go out, or a technician, or a nurse extender who has to go check on that patient every 20 minutes? Right? How do we leverage that technology to address those lower acuity, high effect solutions?
Right. So how can healthcare companies maximize, you know, constrained budgets, you know, the CARES Act and so on?
Well, that's a tough one, right? If you were asking me that kind of in general, about 20 months ago, I would talk about increasing our expectations for our technical partners, expecting your technical partners to do more, and holding them accountable to deliver on what's been promised. Right now, in this kind of end of the pandemic environment, we're really looking at the constrained budgets and saying, okay, you have, the hospital has less money coming in. They have far more expenses in terms of infection control, infection management, PPE, et cetera. And you've got this distributed population who is behaving more like a consumer. And in behaving more like a consumer, they're shopping, and you've lost some care system loyalties, if you will, because I was going here and now I can go to the MinuteClinic down the street, or I was going to this doctor and now I can get 90% of what I need from the clinic in my grocery store. As this is all shifting, I think we have to do a couple of things. The first is, I think that healthcare must start looking at their problems and looking for corollaries with other industries. The banking industry, for example, went through so many of the challenges that we in healthcare go through early on when it came to how do we share information? How can you process your debit card or your credit card at a gas pump and it comes out of the right account? And how do we ensure the security of that? And what infrastructure when it got into that? Because I remember working in a store and someone would give you a card and you had to pick up the phone and key in their phone number and key in and get an authorization code. And then you still had to send the paper to get paid and all of those pieces. And some of that fell away as standards came out and the financial institutions started working together. So healthcare must embrace the successes and the lessons learned from other industries. The successes and lessons learned from other industries will help us kind of say, all right, this has already been solved in this industry. Let's use the same solution somewhere else. We can't simply reinvent the wheel just because it's healthcare. I think the second thing we have to do is really evaluate the criticality pyramid and look at how do we address the lower acuity, broad population components, and how do we do that in the most cost-effective way possible? It's about a remote patient visit for mental health. It's about a remote patient visit for a sore throat or an earache, right? It's about distributing care and extending the capacity of the system without building more brick and mortar, extend the capacity of the system in a digital way. And the third is to look at our highest acuity, highest cost, highest criticality issues, and determine using, as we spoke about previously, the information to determine what are the most efficient treatment plans and to readdress and reassess our protocols for the delivery of those extremely expensive elements of care. That's what we can do in the near term. In the midterm, we're going to have to address the resources available to us and how we are reimbursed and how we're funding. We talked Oh, it's been almost a decade now. We've been talking about this transition from fee for service to fee for value. We're still somewhere in that mix, right? And so, how do we get over that hump? And is it a balance more like we see in other countries, rather than the capitalistic result we have in the U.S.? Or is it more ownership on the patient side? Should the patients carry more of the cost, and how do we address the inequity that between those that have and have not? But we have the same issue in digital inequity: who has access to digital health and who doesn't? So there's a lot of challenges there, but it starts by looking at, what has everyone else done, and how do we address that?
So my last question to you, Andy, is, what's the relationship between business continuity and remote patient monitoring?
When we think about remote patient monitoring and we think about business continuity, you might not think about how those two connect, right? If I think about business continuity, I'm thinking, well, that's systems in place and how we maintain those. Remote patient monitoring, in its purest form, is knowing the status of our patients. And since the patients are the, in many ways, the patient is the currency of our healthcare system. Not money, it's the patient. As long as we're seeing that patient, the money comes with the patient, right? So if we think about that, remote patient monitoring is a dynamic, real-time engagement with our patient or our populations going forward. So if we're saying, hey, Patty, you're in our healthcare system, we'd love to track your Fitbit and send you rewards on that, so that you continue to want to be connected to that, to our health system. I think about it kind of like the travel industry. If I am two flights away from hitting status on Delta, I'm probably not going to book a flight on Southwest because I want to hit that status. I have some brand loyalty, right? And so remote patient monitoring, remote person monitoring from a wellness perspective gives us an avenue to remain engaged with that patient's wellness, to promote that in patient's wellness, and in promoting that patient's wellness, to promoting that connectivity between the patient and the care system that we're talking about. The next element of that is the healthier we keep our patients, the more we use remote patient monitoring to drive wellness, we drive up the wellness score of our population and down the overall cost, right? We know that we don't get reimbursed well for our super high acuity issues, and we get reimbursed better for our low acuity problems. So let's keep the population healthier. We'll still make money, but we won't have those surprise, oh, $1 million cost for doing this bilateral amputation on a diabetic that was out of control, and you're going to get reimbursed 10% on it because they were part of your target population, right? So we have to kind of balance that. And so engaging our patients really is about creating a pathway for stronger revenue generation, stronger revenue positioning within a population, which is essentially, from a healthcare perspective, the business continuity.
Well, Andy, you said so many really important things in, the short amount of time. I want to just, boil down some key takeaways for our listeners. Number one is the complexity of just virtual care. You talked about the different modalities that we now have as opposed to, even 5 years ago. And that we're now dealing with a lot of data. So there's just a lot of complexity all the way around. And what we're trying to get at is having more intelligent, smarter, proactive technology that's going to help secure that data, but also, as you were talking about, the wellness of our patients, engaging our patients. You need all of that to be able to, to do that for our patients, to take care of our patients. Whether it's virtually, and probably not going to be seeing that difference between virtual care and in office care, because it's just going to be care, in general, that it goes across the continuum. And to be able to have smarter, intelligent, proactive technology, you're going to need a partner to help you with that, you know, across the board, because we're kind of in this new world of AI and, you know, being able to leverage, you know, remote patient monitoring at a really higher level to be able to do all of these things so that it does become, you know, keeping our patients healthier, but also from a business perspective as well. So, Andy, I know I said a lot, and hopefully I've boiled down what you've said. So, you know, is there anything else that you want to add to that?
I think you summarized it really, really well. At the end of the day, I always come back to the fact that care is about people and about the person. We used to chastise each other in the hospital when they would say, "Hey, we have a heart coming down." I would say, "Really? What's the heart's name?" Because it wasn't just about a body part. It was about the person. And there's always been a tug of war and a balancing act between the art of care delivery, that compassion, the empathy, the connecting to a human being and helping them feel better, and the science of delivering quality care to resolve whatever issue that brought them in to see you. And I think technology helps us address that. But it also gives us a danger of shifting more in one direction or another. And so as we continue to battle, making sure we address the art and the science of care, no matter how it goes, I think that balance of having good people who care about people, who deliver on care and can leverage technology, I feel pretty positive about the future of healthcare. Thanks so much for having me on.